minutes long. Today we continue with our 8 Forms of Capital episode. We're on part 5 of 8, and today we're talking about financial capital. And I could pretty much just say financial capital is money. Done. We'll do part 6 tomorrow. And I could do that, but it would be missing the point. And I did locate the financial capital one purposely kind of in the middle of the series because it's not as exciting and it doesn't have as many wow moments in it as spiritual or social or material capital, some of the other things we've covered or will cover in the future. And it's the one that most people are completely familiar with. From the article, and again, this all stems from an article at appleseedpermaculture.com, and there's a link in every one of these to the Appleseed article, so you can read the whole thing. But it says, we are most familiar with financial capital, money, currency, securities, and other instruments of the global financial system. The current global society focuses enormous amounts of attention on financial capital. It is our primary tool for exchanging goods and services with other humans. It can be a powerful tool for oppression or potentially liberation. And there's an interesting thing we need to think about when we look at this. And the first part of it is we have to, if we're going to understand financial capital, we're going to realize that financial capital is money. And then we might need to ask ourselves a question like, well, what is money? That sounds ridiculous, but maybe we should examine that for a second. So if you ask some people that are like the gold and silver people of the world, they'll tell you, well, gold and silver is money and nothing else is. It's all fiat currency otherwise or something like that. Or it's only, you know, only hard metal is real money. And they're wrong. They're completely wrong. If you ask some people, they'll say money is an agreed upon means of exchange. And that's the dictionary method definition of money. And it's not wrong, but it's short-sighted. There's things that can be accurate and missing part of the information at the same time. The agreement is the money. That's the key, and that's what most people miss, that the reason that money is because we as a society agree that it is so. And there's reasons we might do that. Maybe the backing of a government is the most common recent reason that people have for the agreement having validity. And as long as there's confidence in the relative stability of the government, then there's confidence in the currency. When that confidence fails, then we see the currency fail. We've seen it happen in different nations across the world. We've seen it happen in a complete and total, you know, scenario where the currency becomes absolutely worthless, and we've seen it happen where the currency simply becomes worth less instead of worthless. So the currency might lose a quarter of its value. That's called rapid inflation. But it all stems from the confidence. It's the confidence that the individuals have in the currency. If somebody will take a dollar for something, a dollar has a relative amount of power. If tomorrow they require $2 for the same item because the confidence in the money has fallen, then that's what the item now costs, and it's the agreement that is the money. It's so important that we understand that if we're going to understand money. Because there have been societies in the past where people were relatively honest, and they used seashells for money. And not some rare exotic seashell that some guy had to dive to the bottom of the ocean for. A basic seashell that a guy could find on one side of the island, and they decided this was our means of exchange. You say, well, how does that work? Because if I wanted more money, I could just go get more shells. Well, this is an honest indigenous society where the shells weren't really the money as more they were in accounting methodology. So when Joe, his name was probably not Joe, but we're going to call him Joe because I couldn't probably pronounce his name, traded with Bill, and Bill had some fish, and Joe didn't have anything that Bill wanted, then Joe said, well, you know, give me 2 shells. And that was like a system of obligation. One had given a fish, the other had given back the shells. The shells were now seen as proof that that one individual that Tom had given a fish to somebody. So he had bankrolled, in essence, some level of energy. So that when someone else had, let's say, the ability to fix his net, then when he gave him 1 or 2 of those shells, that was keeping everything honest within the society so that there was a level of energy being exchanged and that he had earned the right that someone would then trade with him or help him. And he would pass on that symbol for energy. That agreement is the money. And money can be counterfeitable. and still work if no one counterfeits it. But that doesn't actually work in a modern society, right? But it did work in these other places. And you might wonder, what does this have to do with business and the internet and social media and stuff like that? It has tremendous amounts to do with it. Because as long as you see money as something that is a physical thing instead of an agreement, you'll never understand it and you'll never have lots of it. See, money is a symbol for energy. And we know through basic physical law, physical science law, that energy can neither be created nor destroyed, only changed in form. And that's what money really is. It's energy. And all it changes is its form. It might be gold in one society and paper in another, and its location changes from the pockets of some people to the pockets of other people. And if we start understanding to manipulate money the way we would manipulate energy, we start building process funnels and marketing funnels, and we start to actually have some frickin' money. And even though we're following our passion and doing what we love, we don't use that as an excuse to not make money. We'll say, I'm just doing what I love because I like it. We say, I'm doing what I love and I have a profit so they can continue to do what I love. That's the power of understanding the energy thing. Now, looking at it from a more materialistic standpoint, we can see a couple areas in our business where we can focus on financial capital. The easy ones are cash on hand, how much money do we have in our business, and what's our cash flow. So if our business cash flow is about $2,000 a week, then we know that that's our cash flow. And we know that some of it comes out, some of it can stay in. It doesn't all have to go out. It might all go out one week. We know that that cash flow is there. But that's a standard cash flow. And there's a time that it's in the business before it moves out to pay bills or office rent or salaries or whatever, that cash flow creates kind of a stasis in there. So that's one way to look at financial capital. It's the way most people would look at it. But I also, as part of my cash flow, want to look at my future forecasted revenue. How much do I expect to do next year? As long as the business remains stable and that forecast is accurate, since it impacts the future cash flow, if it increases it, if it's going to take me to an average annual or an average weekly cash flow of $4,000 in 6 months, then I can start to think about what I'm going to do with that money and I can start to plan for it. Likewise, if it's going to go down, if there's a hole in my revenue, and many businesses, especially early on, might do okay, but they have these gaps, financial gaps that they have to build bridges for. They have to take a time of plenty and save it up like the ant does for winter so they can get over those bridges, or they have to be willing to bring in borrowed money for a time. I'm totally opposed to debt, but in some business scenarios, it's the only way to keep the business floating for long enough. And the only way I can do it is if I know that I'm going to have the shortfall, and I also know that I'm going to have a windfall after the shortfall, and I'm going to be able to pay the debt back, and I'm just using it as a bridge. That's where it makes sense in a business. Another thing that I can look at is financial capital in my business is what we talked about yesterday. Material capital, or any capital holding of my business that's liquid. If I can convert it easily, quickly, with a known value, I can see it as financial capital, especially if it's not necessary for the operations of the business. So what I mean by that is if my business is a auto restoration company, here's an easy one, and inside my business I have four or five classic cars that I have done restoration, a full tilt restoration on, and they basically sit there as examples to my customers of the work that I do. They have a certain marketing value, but they're really not intrinsic to the business's daily operations. If one of the four cars went away and I had another space to bring in a car to work on, I could actually maybe do more work. So as long as my technicians are there, my cash flow's there, the building's there, the tools are there, the materials are there, it doesn't impact my ability to operate that business. Now that car, let's say it's a 67 split window Chevy Corvette, just 327 fuelie, one of the most awesome cars ever. Now that car might have a value that it supposedly is worth at auction, but that is not what I can consider financial capital in my business. But it has a liquid sellable price. It has a price that if I put it on the market tomorrow, it'll be gone by the end of the day. It's because it's that level of an asset, that level of a material piece of capital. And I can think of that piece of material capital as being at least as valuable as that quick sell liquid price of financial capital in my business, because if I ever need to, If I let go of sentimental value and I need the capital, I can convert it to financial capital. And remember, one of the things we talked about yesterday with the litmus test, if it's really capital, it's convertible to other capital. If it's rapidly convertible, its rapid converting value can be thought of, though it is not financial capital in a business. And it gives you options that you may not normally have. Like instead of going to the bank and begging, maybe you sell off some of your quickly convertible holdings and use that to grow or expand your business, not just maybe to bridge a gap. Maybe it's a growth plan. Maybe it's I need to hire two more people, and doing this will pay them for their first 3 months. So I can hire two people for 90 days with this piece of material capital that I'm going to convert to financial capital by using its rapidly liquid convertible value. And then it also starts to open us up to a lot of things now. If we think about financial capital, and we think about the other forms of capital that can be converted or leveraged to create, remember, we don't necessarily have to convert one to create, right? And this is where we start to break the laws of energy. We're not really, but it almost looks like it. So if I have social capital, and I use that social capital to run an initiative, and that initiative produces sales, I'm, in essence, converting social capital to financial capital, but yet, unlike the hard rules of energy, social capital's not gone. It may have, in fact, grown. It may have grown during the usage. So I'm not taking away from it. But then we start to have to look at things in the energy world, from the energy standpoint, and think back to, like, fifth grade physical science, folks. I know you don't want to, but I want you to do it for me anyway. Remember potential and kinetic energy, right? Well, that means that we can have potential and kinetic income. And that means we can have, let's say, an email list that has a given value that we can run a sale or a special or an incentive at any time we want and generate income, financial capital. That's potential income. We choose when to activate it. And we can activate it many times, but if we activate it too often, it can lose its power. If you run a sale every week, nobody pays full price ever again. They stop. If you run a sale every month, that may be too much. But if you run a sale once a quarter, you get plenty of incremental business due to your sales, and you still keep the majority of your day-to-day business. Right? So that's one way to see potential income. At the time that you enact something and you're generating the cash flow, that's your kinetic income. And so when we look at energy, we say when we take a mousetrap and we set it, it represents potential energy. The energy's in the spring, it's stored up. If the little mouse sticks his nose in there, he's a dead little mouse. Dumbass mouse, should have tried to take that peanut butter. Now you're dead, right? Because the potential energy at the time that he initiated the trigger became kinetic energy, energy in motion. But that's the beauty of business. That's the beauty of monetary energy. There's so much of it out there. There's an infinite supply of that energy that once we spring the kinetic income, it doesn't mean that there's no more. In other words, to make the mousetrap once again have potential energy so it can become kinetic, we have to remove the mouse and flush his little butt down the toilet or whatever. And don't flush the mouse down the toilet. Throw him in the garbage or something, because he might clog your toilet. Reset your mousetrap, and energy has to be expended to reset the mousetrap. When we have a marketing system set up properly, the system resets itself. It's almost like perpetual energy. And that's what we want out of our financial capital, is we're remember, this is all about cultivating your business. You want to make the financial capital generating components of your business self-resetting. You want to make them as perpetual as possible. What do we call this in business? We call it residual income. Now, so that means that if the financial component of your business is sitting on a great big wad of cash, and that cash is invested and the business holds the investment that pays some sort of an investment dividend, that is a perpetual form of energy. It continuously comes in. But for most business owners, we know that that money is actually better invested right back into our own business, because our business's ROI should be bigger than the ROI we get by holding a CD or a bond. But there's a point where we have enough surplus financial capital that we go into that mode as well. This is how we need to be thinking as business owners. It's not just about the money and the cash flow. Those are extremely important. It's about the convertible forms of capital into financial capital. It's about how much of it sits in our business's potential and how much of it at any one time is being done in a kinetic fashion, because here's the reality. This is the reason this is important. The biggest thing I'm able to help a business with when they say, look at my business, look at my website, look what I'm doing, is I'll go into their business and I'll find all sorts of potential capital, potential financial capital. I'll find it sitting in little pockets all through the business, unexploited opportunities to expand other forms of capital that can then be converted, like lack of effective lead capture. That's a potential capital not being utilized. So that's why this is important, even though it seems like it's just money, Jack. It's not just money. It's understanding that potential for kinetic energy, the potential for kinetic revenue in your business that's not being utilized, and making sure you damn well fully utilize it. With that, it's been another episode of 5 Minutes with Jack. Tomorrow we will continue on our series of the 8 forms of capital, and I promise you I'm going to blow you away with the 9th edition of this series when I talk about how they all interplay at a very high level. With that, it's been another episode of 5 Minutes with Jack.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of 5 Minutes with Jack. To learn more, connect with our community, and get free resources to build your business, visit jackspirico.com.